Accession number 11938, rule 53.
G. Iston, Reel 53. What was your role then, Mr. Iston, in this tank carrier action?
Well, it was decided that we couldn't push the tanks over the side with the bodies in. So I went up and to take the tanks, the bodies out of the tank originally, initially, and then to get shot of the tanks so the road was clear. Now, it's unbelievable, really, but I did get the bodies out, but the flesh came away on my hands. And I could still smell this flesh on my hands 3 weeks after I'd been in hospital. It just would not move. Whether it was imagination or not, I don't know. It wasn't the first time I'd done it. I mean, I'd done it on the desert. But this particular time, I suppose it was because I was in hospital and the brain was dying a little bit, and it was just continually there, this smell of burnt flesh.
Do you get used to this kind of...
Yes, yes, you do. I mean, it was really in the hospital where it's troubled me. Well, it wasn't very pleasant because the smell isn't pleasant when you've got burnt flesh. It's not pleasant at the best of times. And a tank, I mean, when a tank really brews up, you must remember that it's surrounded with cordite, explosive shells, HE shells, solid shells. There's the fuel that burns. And I mean, it is an incinerator. There's no doubt about it. It is an incinerator with flames going from the top. Anyway, we did get the bodies out. Oh, we got some bones and bits and pieces out and wrapped them in blankets separately. I don't suppose anybody knew who they were unless the Italians went back and identified who they were. They were marked with the driver and the gunner and so forth. And what happened to the blankets afterwards, I don't know. I got the tanks moved and pushed out the road over the side, and the road was clear.
How did you remove the tanks?
We pushed them away with another Sherman. We shoved and pushed. Everything is fitted with tow ropes in this stage, and we sort of hooked tow ropes on and pulled them round in the direction of where we then probably gave them a good push. Very often, if we can find it, we put a lump of timber between the two tanks on the foreplate of one tank and pushed up against the tank with one shot off and let it jump out the road and let it go. And it works fairly well. We had all sorts of ways of dealing with them, really. Some of them we just put them sideways on and gave them a shove from the side and they had to go over. But when you tramp for space, very often you've got to pull them somewhere, really, it might be sort of half a mile away before you can get them somewhere to get them shot of them, so you've got a clear road. And we did get shot of them eventually, but in fact, by the time we got shot of them, the patrol were coming back. They'd met up with the 51st Dave, and they were on their way back.
When you take bodies, whether they be enemy bodies or your own, and you take them out of machines like this, do you lay them at the side for some other unit to
yes.
come and clear them?
If they're dead, they're generally wrapped up with... If they've got tags, there's a tag put with the body. The name's taken from the tag and recorded, and somebody else comes along. I mean, we don't have time to stand and bury, not in that sort of situation, because we're in no man's land. I mean, we were really in no man's land. We had no idea what was to the north of us. I mean, we'd cleared this road, as far as we could see, we'd cleared the road. We had no idea what was in the north, and we couldn't see very much either, because it was that type of country just here. And Solarino, I mean, you could see quite a distance north. But in this particular place, it was like going through a pass. So we had no idea what was there. But we had caught the Napoli division on the hop. And we had quite a haul of booty at this place, more or less, where the two tanks were. I suppose the two tanks was really a last desperate gamble. although that can't be true because the general of the Napoli division, he was on his way to inspect the troops at Solferino, which we'd held for 5 or 6 hours by then, and he was on his way to inspect them, so I don't know. But we caught the general of the Napoli division as well. And we had a... well, for myself, I got a 10-12 diesel Fiat, a workshop truck with a trailer. And it was well equipped, a small lathe and a drill and stocks and dies, loads of spares. And the trailer was four-wheel steered. The only difficulty was getting it started. But one of the carrier drivers had been a heavy goods driver in Scotland, one of the Scottish lads. And he came along, we eventually got it started. It was one of these where you get everything set. And I mean, I'd worked from diesels from being a practice in Darlington. But I still had a good idea because the British Army has no diesels at all. It was all petrol. But this Scottish lad, he had a good idea what we're talking about. And they had a system where you got everything set, ready for starting. And then you had a big handle, two of you on this great big handle. And you turned it and turned it. And then you were turning a very heavy flywheel. And when you got sort of to a certain speed, the fly was a click on the flywheel, and that clicked into the engine, and you turned the engine over, and hopefully, by continuing to turn, the engine started. We then got to the stage where you slipped one of the valves down and cut the compression off on two or three cylinders, so you just started on one. But this, you started off on six, and but you had this sort of inertia thing. It has a name, Avia Montiere, or something like that. It's an Italian name. Anyway, well, I was quite proud of this, and I was just worrying up how the hell I was going to get back to the UK, because it would have been a great tool for anybody to have. So I got this diesel in the trailer, loaded up, and put the bike in the back of the trailer, and got it back. We also got 10 Lanciers and one or two Morbids. Well, there's quite a haul of stuff that we got. And the Napoli division virtually was finished. And we had a thought that maybe having got shot of that, the road wouldn't be clear to for Sicily, you know, for getting some movement in Sicily. Anyway, having got the Syracuse to Palacio Road clear, we moved back to Solferino in preparation for the next advance. And from Syracuse, the 5th Division were to advance north astride the coast road, while 50th Division would proceed up the narrow, would proceed north up the narrow sort of inner, well, it's not the inner coast, it's a road which runs parallel with the coast, from Floridia to join the coast road at Carlantini. That's about 20 miles north of Floridia. For the first 4 to 5 miles, we went through the plain up the valley. Beautiful country, really. Cultivated olive groves, almond trees, orchards of any description, vineyards. Really beautiful country. But when we got to within about 3 miles of Sortino, these names are peculiar, the Solferino and Sortino. They're only about 8 miles apart, and to us they were quite confusing because we had to be careful how we did pronounce them, because they were going backwards and forwards all the time. And as we got towards Sortino, about 2 miles away, the road got narrower and narrower and twisted in corkscrews. And we were running into the hills then, really into the hills. And at one stage, about a mile from Sortino, it's just like travelling through a precipice. Where the stone cliffs about 300 feet, 91 metres on each side of us, you know. And it was frightening, because you just think there's somebody up there that could beat you with stones, never mind a few guns. It's a terrific place. And
what date was this?
This was the 14th, still the 15th, sorry. We stopped the night in... no, that was the 14th. We stopped... we went back to Floridia and then we moved straight on. And then it was started corkscrew up the hills. And it was just like the Tosca Pass and the Carina Pass in Cyprus. Very similar. The
Tunisia.
Corkscrew. No, the Tosca Pass in Tunisia and the Carina in Cyprus. And corkscrew, you know, you can see the people way above you kind of thing as you're walking through. And I was really amazed the way this four-wheel drive trailer, it carried on up there and no bother at all. It was thrilling in a way, because you could look down, you know, as you're going up, you can look down the side and just see the people below you more or less. So Tina was a twisty one-street village, really, built into the mountain sides, sort of the back of the houses of the mountain, and the little houses took on the side. The place in Italy is very similar, I just can't think of his name now. And we were fortunate, really, that 69th Brigade had been through here the night we were going out to Palazzo. Because it must have been really bad country to be fighting in. I mean, the road was reasonably clear as far as we could see at that stage, but we would see the damage that had been done on the side of the roads. And of course the lads were still marching, really. We had the advantage now of having these 12 10-ton Lanciers that we'd captured the day before, and a 1500-weight truck, and a number of motorcycles, and my workshop truck, and we captured the day before. So the lads were pretty well getting a lift. We had to do a little bit of shuttling, but in most cases the lads were getting a lift. But by now the Luftwaffe was starting to pay some attention to us, and they were probably returning from the shipping in the harbour, from attacking the shipping, and they were giving us a call as they went back. And there's also a few 88mm shells flying over. So although the area had been sort of overrun, we'd overrun the area, there were still a few pockets of troops left, and they apparently were giving directions to the heavy guns and the aircraft working from the plane. The guns were the other side of the Cemento River, Cemento River on the Catanian Plain. The Cemento is actually about five rivers running into one, and it all flows out into the sea of Catania, just below Catania. And we think that some of these troops that were left behind, they were actually doing the direction for the planes and for the shelling. But the planes, they were just ones and twos. There weren't streams of 40 with sticks of bombs going down or anything like that. It was one or two planes flying over and doing a lot of strafing. But mind, the 109 had a 2-inch cannon on the front, so he could do quite a bit of damage if he got around to firing properly. We moved up to Lentini that night, and Lentini is a small town high up in the hills, very similar to Sortino. Very similar to Sortino. And it had one street, one cross street going across it, more or less. Just as we got through Lentini, we turned off into an olive grove where the rest of the battalion were in lager. And they were getting there ready for the advance on Primusol Bridge. In fact, the 9th Battalion had done an attack the same night that we were out at Palazzo, but it hadn't worked very well. The the paratroops, the German paratroopers were in possession there, and they were holding on like fools. Well, they were. What they had prevented them from blowing up the bridge, the 9th and the British paratroopers, the British airborne, it prevented them from blowing up the bridge. And just as I was getting into the lager, it was being attacked by ME-109s. And I turned into the lager and jumped out of the cab and turned out to see the RQMS Barnes dashing under the bonnet of the Fiat to get shelter from the planes. As he did so, I saw the Fiat start to move, and I jumped back to apply more. I shouted at him hard, and I jumped back on the try and put some more brake on. And just got myself onto the running board, and the door opened, and the shell splintered into me, and I fell on the floor in terrific pain. And I must have blacked out straight away, I think, because the next thing I knew was the lads trying to get me give me a smoke and straighten the leg out, which was causing me more pain. I just went over, blacked out again. And then the MO must have given me quite a jab, because I don't remember much more until I can remember being on the stretcher outside a small building, which was probably a school, and in some pain again, and I think I got another jab there. And then I woke up again in an ambulance, and the little lad in the ambulance with us, he said, he was looking out the window and said, we're somewhere near the sea against Syracuse. And I believe we went from, in fact, I'm almost certain that we went back to Evola Bay, because that was our line of communication. And divisions are funny like that. When they go from a place, that's their line of communication to where the advance is. They sort of keep that base and go through. And I'm almost certain I went back to Evola Bay. And I, the next thing I remember is going out on an LCA on the stretcher, and then being hoisted from the LCA with a rope round each handle of the stretcher and hoisted on board a hospital ship. Now, I've lost one hospital ship somewhere. I think it could possibly have been the Atlantis. In fact, I'm almost certain it was the Atlantis. But on the other hand, it could have been the Atlantis that brought me home from Cairo. So I really don't know. But it was a terrific way up from that sea onto the deck of the Atlantis, and then it was carried down. You know, when you just laid on a stretcher and looking up there at the sky and seeing the ropes twisting around and you're spinning around as well. Not a very thrilling experience, but I think I was really too drunk to know much about it. From the Atlantis, they took us back to Tripoli. And I think at Tripoli was number 2 General Hospital, which had been an Italian hospital. And there they sort of put us out and straightened the leg out and put pins through the knee. Because
where had you been hit? What were you
doing? I was hit in the... It started in the buttocks, but the main problem was that the right femur had been shattered. And I think there's a gap of 10 days, actually, from it happening till getting to the hospital. Because when I got to the hospital, I was told that the bones had gone alongside each other. And they had to pull them. Well, I was there for 5 months. And I had weights on all the time, sort of trying to pull the two bones back into line. And then the weights were slightly reduced once they came into line. And they started to callus together. But it was a painful time. They put a pin through just below the knee, into the bottom of the leg, just below the knee. And they put ropes on and pulleys. And they pull the two bones apart so that they eventually do come end to end. And then it's allowed to join. Not like today where they go in and they pull the bones apart, you put it out and pull the bones apart and pin them, because they do that in a matter of hours and the bones haven't really got time to get itched up side by side. I'm told that it is possible in a situation like that, and if the bones had been left, they could have joined side by side, and then of course they would have had a leg sort of 6 inches short instead of 3/4 inch and a quarter short. So they did a good job, really good job. There was a time when they said I wouldn't walk again, but that we got over that one without any problem. Bed bugs were a bit of a problem in the hospital. You'd wake up in the morning and look down the side of the bed and it was all red. Come overnight, more or less, a mass of red bugs. And then there was panics on. They sort of lift you up and drag the mattress out and put another one in, try and get it out without spilling the bed bugs off. It's quite a caper. But there's nursing sisters there, and they were very, very good, extremely good. One or two medical orderlies. One or two very sad things. Well, the lads were dying round about him. There's quite a few that didn't get over it, which upsets everybody, really. Even more than when you see them falling in action, it's even worse when you're in hospital, because you think that they've gone through the trouble of getting back to the hospital, and then it happens after the danger's gone, more or less. And that did upset us a bit. So after 5 months in Tripoli, I went down to Alexandria, and I was only there a few weeks.
Where were you in Alexandria?
I can't remember the name of the hospital or the number, but it was a military hospital.
So this must have been August, September time?
Yeah. I think it was a bit later than that. July, August, September, October, November, December, getting home for Christmas. And in the matron at Alexandria, she was from Barnacastle, funny enough, and her father had been the tuck shop master at school, Mr. Dent. A trip to Alexandria was on the Amarapura, which was an Italian, Indian ship. She'd been a hospital ship since 1941, which had Alaskan crew, and she was different altogether from any other hospital ship I'd been on. Not particularly clean. Well, a typical Indian ship, I would say. But still, we got there, and Sister Dent came through and had a few words with me, Matron Dent. And we stayed in there for about 3 weeks, I think, 3 to 5 weeks. About Christmas time, we went down to Cairo to a hospital there, another military hospital. And there I was fitted with a walking caliper. And that is the most horrible, painful thing I think I've ever seen. It fits over the leg, and you actually walk on the pelvis bone. Oh, it's I can't describe the pain. Anyway, I was told I was a wimp or what's that effect. And I did get used to it. It was a bit before this, because I came back on Christmas Eve to the UK. I came back, I'm almost certain, on the Atlantis, which was a very clean hospital ship. And I landed at Liverpool Christmas Eve, and I went to Worthington Hospital, just outside of Liverpool, a mental home with a hospital, a military hospital attached. And I actually got home for New Year's Eve.
So how were you received after all this time away from England?
Marvellously. It was really marvellous. Some of the people who had been taking the dances in the taxi before the war, they got together and they started a welcome home fund. Didn't quite see that as being the thing, that I should get this money. And he suggested, in a canny sort of a way, that it was a good idea for the money to be collected. They had dances and all sorts for me. They knew I was coming home. They had dances and all sorts for me. And then they called me up to a dance. And I went there and they handed this money over. And I said, well, rather than accept the money myself, I'd rather that it went to a welcome home fund for all the people from the three villages involved. And that was the start of the welcome home fund for the lads.
Which three villages were there?
Well, that was Rookby, Brignall and Wycliffe, which were sort of involved with the ladies that got involved with, and started making this money. And I believe it rose to about £200 apiece by the time the lads came home. It was quite a good thing in a sense. And I got home for just in time for New Year's. And from there I went to Sedgefield, again a military hospital attached to a mental hospital. And I started doing a little bit of medical work there. And I was there till, well, I was on my last trip back there when the invasion started, which was 6th of June. And that was sort of going to my last journey there. And I must have left there early in July, well, maybe late June. And I went to a rehabilitation centre at Halifax, Brentwood Park at Halifax. And there they had us run up and down the hills. I mean, I was always a keen runner. And I thought I was pretty fit. However, they would only pass me as B2. And I had a great disappointment there that the Germans didn't show any interest in me at all with being B2. And
did you ask to go back to the regiment?
Well, it was always in my mind that it would automatically happen. I mean, I thought I was as fit as could be, and I couldn't see any problems really. And I think I could have carried on my work with the regiment just the same. However, they were on the way, but still they would need a lot of reinforcements before they'd come back from the invasion. And I went to Remy. I was at Remy at York for quite a spell, initially for their training, indoctrination to Remy drill, which is entirely different from the Durhams. And that was easy. I mean, it was no problem. And the battle training, I mean, Remy had no idea of battle training at all. Well, I had some idea of what the actual training, but I knew what happened in battle. And they wanted to keep me there in the training wing of the Remy. And for 5 months, I did virtually little, but victory parades, save for a plane and save the soldier, virtually money collecting. And I went all up and down the country doing this, showing me a little medal ribbon off and one thing and another. But I didn't think much about that. I mean, I was back on a private's pay because after a period in hospital, you lose your trade pay and you lose your, a Lance Corporal loses his Lance Corporal's pay. So virtually I was back to a private's pay again. I couldn't see that happening. So I went eventually to take another trade test. And by the time I took the test, I mean, I'd been out of action for 14, 15 months. And the terms of parts had gone completely American. So obviously a lot of the questions that there I was answered, I mean, I just hadn't a clue what they were. So I only got a Class 2 fitter's certificate, which upset me a little bit because I thought I was worth more than that, but still, I do accept it. And eventually I went back to Leicester, number 2 workshops at Leicester. And then I was told I was going to Keighley, to the 8th Durham Light Infantry. So I just looked at the blog then. From Leicester, I was sent down to Aldershot to start with a new workshop to go out to Burma. And of course, by that time, the European war was more or less finished. And my dad didn't think it was, well, quite a few people didn't think it was right that I should be on another posting abroad after having the spell that I'd had. And eventually I was taken off the draft because the emergency had actually gone then. I mean, things had changed completely by this time. And I was sent up to the, taken off the draft, back to Leicester. And from Leicester I was sent up to the 8th Battalion of the General Light Infantry. I just stared at the bloke when he told me. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. Well, again, I was at the 8th Battalion for about a week, and then I went back to the 6th Battalion. Who were back home, of course, doing their training as a training unit. So I stayed with the 6th until they finally broke up. I just forget when that was now. And from there I was sent to the Ordnance Vehicle Park at Raby Castle, just outside of Barnet Castle, where I started from. I think really that Remy, for all your just numbers, they had sort of looked at my addresses and things like that, and they decided that these postings would suit me, which they did. I mean, from Raby I could go home most nights anyway, not every night, but quite a lot of nights I could go home, and it was quite comfortable. And then I was